the McNeil and Parkin Show. Afternoons on the Score.
Show me your face, as clean as the morning. I know things were bad, but now they're okay. Suddenly Seymour is here to provide you sweet understanding. Seymour's your friend.
Nobody ever treated me kindly. Daddy left early. Mama was poor. I'd meet a man and I'd follow him blindly. He'd snap his fingers. Me, I'd say sure. Suddenly Seymour. He purified you.
The McNeil and Parkin Show on 670 The Score.
I don't know if you, if I, my microphone was up and you could just hear my pain. Oh my God.
It's not.
What the hell was that?
How dare you? How dare you? The singer of such classic awfulness, memorable awfulness as Mitch Tember, and the scream and we don't get Mitch again. How dare you criticize the vocal chops of me or our beloved Jason Benetti?
Well, I mean, because I have such talent, I'm able to criticize. We welcome Jason Benetti on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford is in Melrose Park. Benetti, what the hell was that, my friend?
What an expansive definition of the word welcome you just used, Danny.
Oh, my God.
listen. Matt Spiegel is actually a trained singer who knows how to do this. I am someone who sits by his computer and practices a little and does okay for himself. So why don't you take this challenge to do, along with a couple others, the Sweet Child of Mine scene from Step Brothers with us, and we'll make this happen, bro.
Okay. Boom. I mean, like, that would not be the first one I would choose. If you need me to sing, I would do a Final Battle of 8 Mile before I would go Step Brothers. But there's a lot of cursing in that, so I don't know what your policy is on cursing. Is that allowed?
Sure. I mean, it's Twitter.
Hey, wait a minute, Benetti. You said that there were societal norms and parental guidelines that you were trying to follow with the bit, because my initial suggestions for our sportscaster scene, that wonderful bit you've been doing, my suggestions were filthy and were rebuffed, renounced by you.
There's a difference between cursing and the I drink your milkshake scene. There are massive problems with doing that for a wide swath of an audience, Matt Spiegel.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to do, was like, I drink your milkshake. Either that or When Harry Met Sally, I wanted to fake an orgasm inside a Jewish deli along with Benetti. But I was rebuffed, Parkins.
Well, I got to say, I think I was typecast as quivering Paul Dano in your first thought. Like, I think that's a little too on the nose for me.
Oh, the other idea, if you want me to sing, now that I'm with child, and sometimes you're supposed to sing to your child to, like, calm them down at night or something, I'm realizing I don't know the words to any songs. So what? I've been rapping to him the Final Battle from 8 Mile because I know that.
Oh, my God.
He's going to be fine. He's not going to have any developmental problems. I've been singing the song when Tom Cruise hits on Kelly McGillis in Top Gun. You never close your eyes anymore when I kiss your lips. I'm willing to do that scene as well.
Danny, that's called You've Lost That Love and Feeling. It is the most played song in the history of radio. And it actually was written by my cousins, Barry Mann and Cynthia Weil. But whatever, it's just
Don't
a song from
Top Gun. Don't hurt yourself picking
up
those names you just dropped.
Oh, no, it's just the song from Top Gun. I'm Danny Parkins. That's all that is, you know.
Yeah, well, has that song ever had a bigger stage than Top Gun? I don't think so.
I think when the Righteous Brothers recorded it and it dominated the charts, that was a bigger stage, but that's a long time ago.
When Dick Biondi was spinning the hits on Oldies 104.3, it's a bigger stage than Top Gun, Danny.
Is it, though? Is it?
It was for me. I don't know.
Okay. Well, so Jason, listen, you know I'm your Huckleberry. Whatever you need, I will answer the call. And let's just put it this way. As I've watched every sportscaster scene, Dan Bernstein is the gold medalist for his scene from The Princess Bride. Everyone else is playing for second place, and I don't think Matt Spiegel will make the podium. That's my review of Fair. You've done 10 of them so far. Is that correct?
Well, today was a big day because we actually convened 10 sportscasters to do a full episode of Cheers with actual George Wendt. So that went up today.
A full episode?
We did an entire reading of a Cheers episode. Ken Levine, one of the writers for Cheers, has become a friend through baseball. And he sent us all a script, and we got a bunch of people together, including Susan Waldman from the Yankees playing Carla. And we did an entire episode of Cheers.
Incredible. It's wow. Amazing. And you've got Mudcat Grant, Mark Mudcat Grant, in the role of Woody Harrelson. And that is just that was the one that cinched it for me, maybe even more than the appearance of actual George Wendt in the role of George Wendt. Yeah.
Well, I have to say, and Chicago people, I think, will get the vibe here, and I love him dearly. Chip Carey was an outstanding Sam Malone. Chip, like, has a little bit of Sam in him, and he by the end of it, he was, like, embellishing lines. He was fantastic.
Wow, that's awesome.
I'm pulling this up now. What did my guy Steve Fizziok do? What is he doing there?
So Fizz read the stage directions. So, like, when you say, like, fade in to the bar, that was Fizz.
Which is perfect.
He was amazing.
That is actually, and this is very inside, but that is actually perfect casting for Steve Fizziok's personality. Wow, I love that. I can't wait to go watch it later. What else? How else? You know, I know you've been reading the messages from Sox fans. That's been great. You've been doing Sportscaster series. How else have you been spending your time, Jason Benetti?
I've been hanging out, watching some old television. I now have a PS4. I'm playing MLB The Show, doing a little dabbling in some fiction writing for fun, and trying to not watch the news all the time.
See, this is the thing. The wide array of influences and knowledge and talents within this guy. I know that people have their thoughts on that particular recording. As a singer and a musician, doing something with multiple people on Zoom is death. It is folly to even attempt. The latency issues make it nearly impossible. Like Bill Roth, who you had playing piano, is terrific and sounded great when it would be just him. And then all of a sudden with us, it sounds like a child on Schroeder's toy piano, you know?
It is. So the reason you do it is because you know that the carnage is about to happen, but you try to be good enough to rise above all of the fire and brimstone and generally don't.
Yeah, right. But so the idea that we would choose something with like harmonies and counter melodies, it's amazing because I think Jason and I went back and forth with different suggestions from musicals. Like, should we do this one, do that one, do this one? And then we ended on one which was probably the most difficult to achieve. Good job, everybody. I'd like to.
Yeah, and like, you know, I got caught in between knocking it down like a half an octave and a full octave. I was like a three quarters of an octave below it. It was not great.
But you have chops. That's the point. You have legit musical singing chops. I had no idea. Where is that from? What is your background in this realm?
I sing in the shower and the car. I don't know. This is a really weird thing to say, but the way we started the segment, what could go wrong? When I was driving to games, especially early on, right after I graduated from college, I was living in North Carolina, and I had like this half-hour drive to High Point University where I did their basketball games, and I used to put on the guy who played Frasier's upstairs neighbor, Brian Stokes Mitchell. He's got this very deep voice, and I would put on songs of his that he'd sing in like Ragtime or The Impossible Dream or something, and I would just like try to find his really low range because I thought it expanded my voice a little bit for wow. what I could do during games. So I kind of sang in that half hour drive, and I just like doing it. It's fun.
That's awesome. We're talking to the voice of the White Sox, Jason Benetti. McNeil and Parkins on the score with Spiegs in for Mac. You can take this in any direction that you want to, but as you follow the news of baseball's various plans to return, how are you feeling about the likelihood of any of this working?
I feel strongly that baseball is going to do everything they can to safely play. And like, I know that sounds like a PR answer, but Danny, you'll understand this, and Matt, you will too, but Danny's more of a degenerate who knows numbers. So I would say that we're kind of like playing blackjack without knowing what our cards are with the whole virus thing. And so we're all kind of stabbing it. Yeah, I'm in. I mean, I like that, Danny. You just took it on the surface. You're like, yes, I will wager on this. That's not the point. Down, Rex. So the point is, like, we're all trying to figure out what the best solution is, but we don't know what risk is involved. Like, when Blake Snell comes out and says what he says, that's what he feels in his heart. But we're all just stabbing at what the risk is, right? We know it's elevated. We know there's danger out there. But we don't know what the risk is to society as a whole because we don't have it squared up very well. So I think at some point we're going to have to go do things, obviously, in our world. And the question is, can we get to a place within the next month and a half where we have a better idea of that risk? Because not knowing the risk puts two parties farther apart in any negotiation. That's just 100% true. You're going to have that bigger divide when people don't really know what the risk is, because one side will inflate it, one side will deflate it a little bit. So I think it's actually just tough on both parties here. And I'm not trying to play it down the middle and, again, give you like a cliched answer. I really think when we don't know what the risk is and we don't have a coordinated solution and we're all doing this regionally as sects of the country, like, it is very difficult to have a national plan for a national baseball league as we have. So I just tend to give them a lot of leeway to try and find a good solution and know that they're not, in the era of big data even, not going to find a perfect solution, but hopefully they play.
Have you had any discussions about broadcasting remotely or what broadcasts without fans will look like if and when this comes back?
You know what? Like, very, very, very early in the planning stages for that, and it hasn't even gotten to me. I mean, I know that there are some phone calls going around just because I've heard of, like, other teams – like production people. I'm on a couple group threads of people who are in production around the country, and they're starting to hear rumblings from the crewing people. But I haven't gotten to the point where we've talked at all about where we would go, because I think we still don't know where the games would be played. And that matters. Like, if we're in our home ballpark, maybe we can go to our home ballpark. If it's in Arizona, do we all go to Arizona, or do we all sit in our own markets and do it from a studio? I mean, Brian Curtis wrote a piece in The Ringer that I, among like seven other announcers, were quoted in, but the whole idea was, what if games went remote for a short time? What would that look like? And the fact that people are starting to have those discussions makes me think it's on the table, but I really don't think they're far enough along to know that yet, because we don't know where the games are going to be.
If the games are at the home ballpark, which I think is what MLB desires, and not that that will be July, it could be August, who the hell knows. But if the games are there and you're there, the level of control that you and the broadcast networks would have to paint the picture acoustically is fascinating, isn't it? We were kicking around this around with football yesterday after what Joe Buck had said. I would hope that the league would allow each network to kind of make their own choices. Each RSN, even if you would like to pipe in crowd and try to make it sound like a produced game, go for it. If you want to take a more verite approach, go for it. That could be a really interesting palette to paint with, don't you think, Jason?
It very well could. I mean, there are so many options on the broadcast table, right? Like, will they be more flexible in terms of miking players or things like that? There's so much that you can add as a decoration to these games. But the one thing for me, like, as an announcer, a lot of people have said, what's it going to be like to do games with no crowd? I mean, this is not slandering the minor leagues in any way, because I think it's true in a lot of places. Monday and Tuesday nights in A-ball, there are not many people at the games. There just aren't, especially when the weather's bad. And, like, I've done games from inside booths that don't even have windows that open. Like, I've seen a lot of different scenarios where it's weird. Like, you're doing a game and it's just strange. So I'm kind of excited for the challenge to see what it sounds like and to make sure that we're bringing the energy that we typically bring. But I agree, there's so much available, and I really do hope that Major League Baseball is open to, and the Players Union, along with the owners, are open to these things having to do with changing the broadcast in some way, just to not necessarily spice it up, but to use the tools we have to teach the game. I mean, I was watching a Trevor Bauer video on his YouTube channel about an hour ago, and he's out like in the desert with a bunch of different guys, and they're just mic'd up talking about what they're throwing each other. And I know this is much more serious than a YouTube video, but I think people want to hear from the players. Maybe we can mic them up and then play it after the game. I don't know what it looks like, but there's so much available.
Jason, I don't mean to put you in a weird spot here, but I just, like, we're close enough. I feel like I can ask you this, and I'll just tell you that I've said the other day on the show that you should be considered for Monday Night Football. Are you being considered for Monday Night Football?
Well, I am plus 1,200, according to Bovada.
That's incredible.
I got a bunch of texts up when I think posted the other day, like the line, Steve Levy's plus 300, and a group of us are plus 1,200 together. But I've never been plus 1,200 for anything before, so I'm excited about that.
12 to 1.
Yeah, I mean, whatever that looks like. I can't say anything, yes or no. I don't feel right about that, but I don't know where they are in the process, but I am an announcer there, and I would love for that to happen at some point. But no, I've not had specific discussions in any, like, serious capacity about that.
Is that appearance? Is that your first appearance on Bovada or any sort of odds website, Jason?
They had a career over plus 1,500 on Suddenly Seymour the other day, so that was also there. But you know, determination of career. No, yeah, this is the first time I've ever been able to be bet on in any official capacity. So yeah, it's a hallmark moment for me, certainly. And I'm not trying to be dodgy about it. It'd be awesome at some point, but there are a bunch of options at the network, and it's not like I've had serious discussions about it.
Well, all I will say is that I hope that we're tight enough that if it ever comes true, that you tell me before it becomes public so I can get 12 to 1 and bet on you. A little bit of insider trading.
Is this all you were doing? You're like the odds on blind blackjack weren't good enough earlier, so now you're just digging.
Yeah, you think I didn't know that I could get 12 to 1 on you, Benetti? Come on now. Of course I did.
Yeah,
so I wanted to know if there was a little value there. Come on now.
I was surprised. I was surprised that Fowler and Herbstreit were plus 2,000 on the numbers. I thought for sure they would be better odds than me. But, you know, life hits you fast, as the kids say.
Yeah, well, you know, okay, so you do college football. And you talked about some of the logistical issues with baseball coming back. I have said that it's not the same for college sports, and college sports is more difficult because it would be really tough to make the ethical argument, you know what, it's not safe for kids to be on campus, but it's absolutely safe for college students to play college football. And then Brett McMurphy reported that the conference commissioners and many athletic directors disagree with that, and that they are perfectly comfortable with having online-only classes, but saying, yeah, go ahead, play college football. Does that make any sense to you as someone who does big-time college football games?
Honestly, the thing that I, like, I don't want to say I don't care, because I do, like, I want college football to exist. But with the experience I had in college and the people I met and the stuff I got to do, and Danny, you know what I'm talking about, like, the environment that's there in terms of pushing people, like, I want colleges to be in session. It is good for our country to have colleges in session, and I want to get to a point, whether it's with a treatment, a vaccine, or like an actual coordinated federal policy to get this done, I want people to be in college classrooms because I know what it meant for my life. So I'm like, I care about college football, but I really would hurt for the youth of our country if they didn't get to go to college, based selfishly in some ways on the experience I had there and how much it changed my life.
Oh, here. Talk Amen. About all these kids that are missing, have missed their graduations and missed their high school proms. Can you imagine having to start college? And my nephew is one of them, having to start college for your freshman year and not being able to go away. It's just, it would really be tragic in a lot of ways for some of those kids. Jason, I asked you a couple weeks ago, are you still, and your answer, I said, what are you eating too much of? And you said the Good Humor frozen chocolate eclairs. Is that still an issue in your life, or have you gotten it under control?
No, I have tormented my box of chocolate eclair bars into submission, and I've moved on to fudge stripe cookies with milk.
Well done.
Yeah, bring it, fudge stripe cookies. You have no chance.
Benetti, you're the best. Hit me up. We'll do a Sportscaster series. I'll try not to ruin the whole thing for you. But thank you very much for the time.
I don't know, man. You were a little harsh on Sportscaster scenes earlier, and I honestly think, like, I think we should have a poll, and the listeners should pick the scene you have to do.
Oh, okay. So, like, what's the hardest and most difficult for me? That's fine.
Yeah, I think that would be fun.
Yeah, you know me. Content, baby. Let's go. Gimmicks.
Hashtag content.
Yeah, bits, content. Let's do it. Jason, thank you. We'll talk soon.
Bye, guys. Thanks, Speaks, for having fun with me. Sorry, Danny's a wet blanket.
I'm used to it. It affects me not at all. Thank you, Jason.
That's Jason Benetti, voice of the White Sox. Matt Nagy's going to join us at 5 o'clock, but coming up next, he is an infectious disease expert. He's an epidemiologist over at Advocate Lutheran General Health. He studies infectious diseases. He is an expert on what is going on. Is baseball's plan possible? Is NCAA plan possible? Is warp speed vaccination possible? We ask a doctor next on The Score.
We have developed extensive protocols. A key to those is frequent testing. All of our players would be tested multiple times a week, PCR testing to determine whether or not they have the virus. That testing would be supplemented less frequently by antibody testing as well.
Rob Manfred, the Commissioner of Baseball with CNN. This segment brought to you by DuckDuckGo Privacy. Tired of being tracked online? DuckDuckGo can help. They help millions of people like you take control of their personal information online. With one download, you can search and browse privately, avoiding trackers all for free. DuckDuckGo Privacy Simplified. Bears head coach Matt Nagy is meeting the Chicago beat writers right now. He's going to join us at 5 o'clock. We're going to have some fun with the coach. We'll pass along any football news, nuggets, information that the beat writers get out of him. But we're also going to just try to have a fun conversation with the Bears head coach and not take everything so seriously. There will still be plenty of football in the conversation, but just as an FYI. I've really enjoyed talking to our next guest, but not because I have to talk to him, if that makes sense. Like, the news of the day sucks so that we have to have an infectious disease expert for the show, but if we have to talk to an infectious disease expert, Dr. Rob Citrenberg from Advocate General Lutheran General Hospital has been fantastic. Dr. Rob, thank you once again for the time. How are you doing today?
I'm doing okay, Danny.
Okay, well, so before we get to baseball's plan and the NCAA's plan, which is what you know, sports fans are certainly interested in, I was watching television today. And,
dangerous. That's dangerous,
yeah,
Danny.
It was my first mistake, Doctor. And the president came on the screen. And the cryon was very exciting. The thing at the bottom, the news bar, it said vaccination update press conference. Huh, this is excellent. And he said the title of this plan is Operation Warp Speed, which sounds like something out of a Mel Brooks movie in Spaceballs. You're the expert. Can you just call something warp speed and fast track a vaccine? Is that how that works?
No, not really. It takes a certain amount of time to develop a vaccine, test it to make sure it's safe, and then test it to make sure it works, that it has the desired effect. And just to give you some perspective, most vaccines that are developed, can take six or 8 years to develop, and the vast majority of vaccine candidates fail. They never even work. The advantage we have here is that basically the entire world is working on a coronavirus vaccine. But even with that, at the so-called warp speed, you're still looking at a time frame of 12 to 18 months minimum before you can get a vaccine that is safe and that works and that is mass-produced and available to give to the public. So that's I think people don't realize if you get a vaccine out in 12 to 18 months, that is amazing, and that would probably be a record.
So just to follow up really quickly, Spiegs, so the president said it's going to be warp speed. He was optimistic for a vaccine by year's end. But even without a vaccine, he said we're opening up with one or without one. As a doctor, as someone who studies this, when you hear that is the plan, we're opening with one or without one, what's your reaction?
It's concerning because we know that the only real way to ensure safety for people to go outside is to have what we call herd immunity, where we need to get the vast majority of people in the country immune to the disease. We're usually looking at 80 to 90% or more of the population that either has had the disease or has had a vaccine. We're nowhere near that at this point. Maybe 10 or 15% of the country has been exposed. We don't know exactly how much, but it's probably in that range. So we're nowhere near that point of natural immunity in the population to say that it's safe to go outside. And the truth is, we don't even know if people who have had the disease are really immune to getting it again. We don't know that yet. So the real key to opening up society is to have a vaccine that works. That's the only realistic way we're going to eradicate this pandemic, is to have a vaccine that works.
So before we get to those specific plans for baseball and college football, Doctor, what you just said maybe answers this question, but is there a scenario where a crowd would be acceptable at an event or even a small event like live music, 300 people, 400 people, without a vaccine? Like if there's a treatment, if we feel we've reached a point where we know how to treat it at the very least and minimize the damage, do you think people would congregate, or is that, you know, what is the key to making that possible, I guess, is the question.
Well, I think if you had a medication that we were sure worked and could, if you got the disease and you took the medicine, then you could get rid of it, that might change the plan, but we don't have that yet, and we're pretty far away from having a medication that we know works. In terms of having gatherings of people, I look at examples in countries that got an early handle on eradicating this disease or controlling it. For example, in South Korea, where they got a really good head start, were able to get rid of this disease. But now that they've opened up the country, there's clusters of cases. They opened up restaurants and bars. And wouldn't you know, within a few days or a couple of weeks, there's a lot of cases that are occurring now. We're starting to see that in other countries around the world as well that got an early handle on. So I think that answers the question that those gatherings of 100, 200, 300 people are risky.
So, Doctor, people have been wanting these baseball labor conversations, which can get ugly, and especially when they're about money. They've been wanting it to focus on safety. Well, Rob Manfred laid out a bunch of protocols and ideas that baseball has for safety. So we wanted to run some of these by you. He said if they were to, you know, be able to have games, and it would be fanless games, but they'd have a small amount of players and umpires and some media, that kind of thing, that players would be tested multiple times a week with a 24-hour turnaround for results because they're working with a lab that usually works with them for drug tests. But Rob Manfred said if a player tests positive, the sport does not need to shut down. He says our experts are saying we don't need a 14-day quarantine. What we will do is the positive individual we remove from the rest of the group. There will be a quarantine arrangement in each facility in each city. Then we'll do contact tracing for the individuals that we believe there was contact with and point of care testing for those individuals to minimize the likelihood that there's been spread. Is that a good idea? Is that even going to be something that will be agreed upon by the players or should be agreed upon by the players?
Well, I think whether it's agreed upon is probably up to the players. I can tell you from a medical standpoint, it's concerning. I think what people don't realize, we think of this disease as being very bad in people who are older and have impaired immune systems. But the fact is, even though if you're young and healthy, you're less likely to get sick and die from this, you can. And it's not inconceivable that a baseball player could get sick and die from this virus, or that a baseball player could contract it and bring it home to his family, and where he is a wife and children who could get infected and get sick. So I understand what he's saying. Well, we're just going to quarantine the people, but what about the person who's infected? What happens to them? I think that they're not really seeing it in true perspective, just how bad this disease is. And I think it falls in the category of unnecessary risk. As much as we want to see baseball, I love baseball, I miss baseball, but it just falls in the category of unnecessary risk. The other thing is that there is not an unlimited supply of testing materials in this country. And I think a lot of people might be upset that these tests are being used on baseball players instead of those in our underserved communities, which are particularly hard hit by this disease. So there's an issue there, too, with society. Is that the best use of our limited resources? And I think people have a lot of questions about that.
Dr. Rob Sitrenberg, Director of Infectious Diseases at Advocate Lutheran General Hospital, is our guest. Is any plan out there right now a good one? Like, is anybody doing a good job with this?
Well, I listened to Jason Benetti's spot, and I think he was exactly right. We're trying to make a plan for something that we don't understand. And the problem is to plan sports, you have to do it in advance, but you don't know what the situation is going to be like in a month or 2 months or 3 months. And so from a purely medical standpoint, ignoring economics, and I understand the importance of economics and the importance of society of having sports, from a purely medical standpoint, from what we know right now, Cook County has more cases of COVID-19 than any county in the entire country. So we're so heavily burdened. And what we know right now at this moment, probably the best solution for Major League Baseball would say, stay safe, everybody. See you next year. And I know a lot of people don't want to hear that, but from a purely medical standpoint and avoiding unnecessary risk, that's probably the right answer.
Yeah, that's nothing anybody wants to hear. Go ahead, Danny, but I understand.
No, it's not anything that anybody wants to hear. And the truth is that you are coming on from the medical standpoint, and there are people who will make the argument economically, and then there are people who make the argument that just we have to live with some risk, and there's a lot of things at play here, and we've talked about them as you've been on over the last 6-8 weeks, right? There's federal issues, there's local issues, there's geographic differences. We don't know anything really about this disease. People are doubting it. People are getting bad information. Like, there's just 100 different factors that are working against us here. With regards to college sports, I am curious what you think about the idea of, like, what sport would be, like, is football the worst? Because these university presidents are saying right now, their public stance, Doctor, is we don't need to have kids on campus for us to have college football. When you hear that, what's your response?
That's it's a tough argument, and certainly you have to question what a student athlete is. Are they a student first or an athlete first? But I would just focus on the sports and look at any sport that's going to be played, even baseball. You know, the batter, the catcher, and the umpire are all standing next to each other. Even though baseball is not a contact sport, there's contact. People are standing next to each other. Football is the ultimate contact sport. And the risk, if you have one person on that football field who is infected, every single person will get it. This virus is so contagious that in that environment with close contact and spreading secretions, everybody will get it. So I would just look at it like that.
What, you said if one person on a football field has it, everybody who plays in that game will get it?
If anybody who's been in contact, there's a very high probability they can all get it. That's correct.
Okay. Well, there's not going to be football then, because I don't – right? Isn't that game, set, match then? Because the other thing that's been interesting is, right, I like the UFC. They had an event. One of the fighters tested positive. They didn't cancel the card, but you can sequester all of the fighters. The NBA held a call, and they said, we have to prepare our players for a thing that's like, if there is a positive test, that doesn't mean we shut it all down. In the past, it was, if there's one positive test, everyone needs to get quarantined. The leagues are now starting to prime the public for a positive test doesn't mean the whole team gets shut down. Is that medically sound?
From a pure medical standpoint, I would say no. And the reason is, instead of thinking about it as a positive test, think about it as a person who gets the disease. And that person's going to get sick, get it very sick. They can spread it to other people. So I think when you think about it just as a positive test, maybe it doesn't hit home as much. But when you think about that as a person who is sick with the disease, it's a different story. So that's how I like to look at it. Rather than, we don't talk about tests, we talk about people. That's probably a better way to put it in perspective.
Is there an eventuality, Doctor, that when we do restart society with whatever we choose to do, however we approach it, that we are going to have to live with a certain amount of risk? The way this thing is showing the possibility of mutating, the way that we've been inconsistent as a country in dealing with it, do you think there's going to be a point where we're all just going to have to accept that there is risk and we have to incorporate that into our lives?
Oh, for sure, Matt. We will have to, but what we'll have to do is figure out ways to mitigate the risk. So instead of, when we go back out into society, instead of going out without a mask on and just going into crowds, we'll have to figure out a way to continue to wear those masks, to continue to social distance, and to re-enter safely in ways to mitigate the risk. But yes, even with that, there's always going to be some risk. But let's face it, there has to be some balance. We can't live like this forever. We have to get back out there. But whatever we do, whether it's sports or anything else, we have to create scenarios that just minimize the risk of people getting sick. But we'll never eliminate it completely. That's exactly right.
So I guess I need to ask this again. It's been a few weeks. Let's say you're in charge, because you acknowledge, right? We have to go back. There has to be some risk. We can't live like this until there's a vaccine. So medically, let's say it was up to you. How would you be advising us to go back into society? Forget sports.
I think the governor issued a pretty good plan a couple of weeks ago. Stepwise approach. You start with small groups, one-on-one interactions, smaller groups, and as the numbers improve, then you can start to go back into larger groups. But in his phase five of the plan, those are the largest groups, stadium crowds, concerts. Those are on the horizon right now, the distant horizon. But you start smaller groups, because if it's a one-on-one interaction that has the least risk to anybody, then smaller groups, if you go to a restaurant where tables are spaced apart, that's a pretty small risk. When you start to increase the numbers of people, 50 people, 100 people, 200 people, the risk is going to go up proportionally. So I think it's just a stepwise approach. Follow the numbers, see how you're doing. People need to understand just how contagious this disease is and why it's so important to stay away from each other until we get this under control.
Dr. Rob Citrenberg studies infectious diseases. He is in charge of them over at Advocate Lutheran General Hospital. He's been an invaluable resource for the show. Doctor, as always, thank you for the time.
My pleasure. Thanks, guys.
It's Dr. Rob Citrenberg. Matt Nagy joins us at 5 o'clock. We're back well before that on the Score.
It's the same that I've done with all my backup quarterbacks, and I feel great about those relationships that I've developed over the years. You know, many of them are still really close friends. You know, I consider Matt Flynn a very close friend. I still have great contact with, you know, a lot of guys I've played with over the years, from, you know, from more recent to Deshaun and Manny to Tim and I are really close. Brett Hundley and I keep in touch all the time. Scotty Tolzien and I, you know, talk from time to time. So I've had great relationships over the years with those guys, and expect to have the same type of relationship with Jordan.
Aaron Rodgers taking the high road. We're going to talk to Matt Nagy in just a couple of minutes. Want to know the challenges. I bet you he's being creative about getting his team ready in the midst of a pandemic. And we're going to have some fun with the Bears head coach coming up at 5 o'clock. Hopefully it's the polar opposite in tone from Dr. Citrenberg speaks. That's my goal.
I remember that was my job a couple weeks ago. I came on right after the doctor. My job was to bring the good vibes, and I failed. So good luck to Coach Nagy. I bet he can
good
do it.
Lord. Good Lord. That was great. Just leave that feeling like, whew.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
All right. Okay.
Well, we ask a question, we get an answer. We want it to be scientifically based and from a medical expert, so you can't be mad at the answer, right? Don't shoot the messenger, that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's the idea. I just hope the rest of the world I hope the rest of the world wasn't listening, so we get sports back, because I just care about sports, Danny. That's all I care about.
That's what's important. Matt Nagy met the beat reporters. He said there will not be a quarterback competition over Zoom. There will be more 11-on-11 in practices. Nick Foles will know the playbook. He's not at a disadvantage because of this. He's not worried about him learning the playbook. We will talk a little bit about that, but also just what the hell is going on here in these strange, uncertain, unprecedented times. The Bears head coach, Matt Nagy, next on the Score.